heard anything from Kim that indicates that he has made a fundamental decision to give up his nuclear weapons and his ballistic missiles.
There were many smiles at the latest North-South Korea summit. Are they warranted? And the U.S. Secretary of State acts very quickly. It's Thursday, September 20th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. We'd love to hear from you. You can join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, China's massive Belt and Road project could be threatening the Mekong River. Venezuela owes China a lot of money. We'll explore how they're paying it back. It's all on today's VOA Asia. North Korea says it will dismantle its main nuclear complex in Yongbyon if the United States takes corresponding measures under a comprehensive agreement reached by the leaders of the two rival Koreas. This agreement was announced Wednesday in Pyongyang by North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and South Korean President Moon Jae-in at the close of the second day of their three-day summit. The North's offer to close the Yongbyon facility was coupled with a pledge to permanently shut down its missile engine testing facility and launchpad under the watchful eye of international experts. During the joint announcement with President Moon, Kim Jong-un told reporters, "We've agreed to make the Korean Peninsula a land of peace free from nuclear weapons and nuclear threats." U.S. President Donald Trump expressed his pleasure Wednesday about the news from Pyongyang.
"We had very good news from North Korea, South Korea. They met, and we had some great responses. I got a tremendous letter from Kim Jong-un. As you know, it was delivered 3 days ago. We're making tremendous progress with respect to North Korea. Prior to becoming president, it looked like we were going to war with North Korea. And now we have a lot of progress. We've gotten our prisoners back. We're getting our remains back. They continue to come in. A lot of tremendous things, but very importantly, no missile testing, no nuclear testing."
We welcome to VOA Asia, Asia expert Gordon Chang. Among many roles, he is author of the book Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World. Gordon, are you as seemingly as gleeful about this North-South Korea summit statement as is President Trump?
Maybe a little bit less gleeful. I think that it's important to give Kim Jong-un that one-shot opportunity that President Trump talked about in June before the Singapore summit. I think that Kim Jong-un deserves that chance to do the right thing. But today we have not heard anything from Kim that indicates that he has made a fundamental decision to give up his nuclear weapons and his ballistic missiles. He's made some gestures. That's a good sign. That is progress. But we need to see much more, especially at this stage of the discussions.
It has been questioned as to whether or not some of the agreements dealing with the two Koreas that have been reached or nearly reached by the presidents of North and South Korea might go against U.S. and U.N. sanctions. What do you have to say about that?
Well, clearly Moon wants to shovel money into the coffers of Kim Jong-un. I mean, they talked about all sorts of joint projects, especially the railroads. This is going to be something that won't make any progress at all until those sanctions by the U.N. are lifted and until the U.S. also lifts its measures. I think that this was sort of just aspiration on both the part of Seoul and Pyongyang. And really, you know, Moon Jae-in, the South Korean president, understands they're not going to make progress on these joint economic projects until North Korea gives up its weapons.
It seems that you're doing something you haven't done much before, and that is giving a little credence to what this meeting has done, that maybe some progress has been made.
Well, yeah, of course, gestures are progress. But what we really want to see are steps on the part of Kim Jong-un to give up his nuclear weapons and his ballistic missiles. And that's absolutely critical. He's going to have to do some things that he's been unwilling to do. And I think one of the important things today is something that was not said. Kim Jong-un did not make a promise to make a declaration of his missile and nuke sites. And that's got to be the starting point of a long series of negotiations with Pyongyang. We haven't even gotten there yet.
Is this more of the same we've been hearing now for a long time?
This could be more of the same. We won't really know for a little while. We do know that Kim Jong-un is a little bit different than his father and grandfather, his predecessors. And we also know he's under pressure internally to deliver prosperity. He's under pressure from the poorest North Koreans and under pressure from the Dongju, the new moneyed class. So there are reasons why Kim might make decisions that haven't been made by his father and grandfather. But this is something that we're just going to have to test him. And on the part of the United States, it's going to be how much pressure are we willing to apply to North Korea and its sponsors, Russia, China, and increasingly South Korea. So this is more, I think, a question of what the U.S. is willing to do rather than the question of what the North Koreans and its sponsors are willing to do.
Where do you see this going now?
I see that essentially Kim is going to try to play for more time, because at this particular moment, he's getting everything that he wants, a sanctions relief, getting support from the Chinese and the Russians and the South Koreans. He may not get all that he wants in terms of sanctions relief, but he's getting all that he needs. And that means that he's been recalcitrant on making the big decisions of giving up his nukes and his missiles. So I see that essentially a couple months from now, President Trump is going to have to pivot again, go back to maximum pressure, maybe even going back to threats. So this is going to get more, there's going to be more friction before there's more sweetness and light.
Gordon Chang, thank you so much, and hopefully we shall talk again in the near future.
Thank you.
Well, late Wednesday afternoon here in Washington, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo welcomed what he called the important commitments made by North Korean leader Kim Jong-un at the summit with his South Korean counterpart. Pompeo said that he had invited North Korean Foreign Minister Ri Yong-ho to meet with him in New York at next week's United Nations General Assembly. He also said Pyongyang's representatives have been invited to hold talks with the U.S. Special Envoy for North Korea in Austria at the earliest possible opportunity. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on VOA Asia. Make that voanews.com. Bangladesh's parliament Wednesday passed a controversial Digital Security Act, despite protests by journalists who say that law will severely curb media freedom in the country. The new law, which according to a draft carries heavy jail sentences for secretly recording government officials or spreading negative propaganda using a digital device, was approved by a voice vote. Alcohol poisoning kills at least 21 people in Malaysia, where cheap homemade liquor is popular among migrant workers. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia now continues as China pushes its Belt and Road Initiative across Asia to strengthen its economic links with new transport routes. The Mekong River faces possible irreversible changes as Chinese engineers seek to detonate stretches of the river to allow 500-ton shipping boats. Steve Sanford reports from the Thai port of Chengkang on how these detonations could affect the Mekong, which flows through six Asian nations.
Here along the Mekong River, development and trade have changed the economic landscape for many living on its shores. For local fisherman Manis Sutawong, profits have shrunk due to the adverse effects of seven upstream Chinese hydropower dams that control the flow of water and fish.
In the past, we used 16 centimeters and 14 centimeters, but now we only use 10 centimeters. They still have some big fish left, but not many like before.
Major highways linking the countries have already been built, but China insists on expanding the Mekong, using explosives to blast the rocks and sandbars along a mile stretch. Last year, environmental protests put the plan on hold, but despite evidence of impending harm to fish breeding grounds and farmland, environmentalists fear the expansion will proceed.
The Chinese expand their economic power. This is part of their strategy to have control and power with one belt, one road. This is the foundation of their plan to control the world economy. All the benefits go to them only.
Despite opposition, local business groups foresee the expansion as an opportunity to bring in the tourist dollars. Downstream from the Rocky outbreaks in the Golden Triangle, a local trade port is set to be converted to a tourist trade center, drawing local support.
In my opinion, I want this project to happen. Do it. Make it wider. Many people are concerned that if we make the river wider, the Chinese boats will pass by Changsan and not stop, and they go to buy the product somewhere else. It is not true.
China's foreign ministry says projects will only proceed with the joint consent of all parties. But many are wondering if the environmental impacts will really be worth it. Steve Sanford reporting from Chiang Kong, Thailand.
Happening now in Asia, former Malaysian Prime Minister Najib Razak has been arrested a third time in connection with the scandal plagued one MDB state investment fund. The government's anti-corruption agency charged Najib Wednesday over allegations that he siphoned $627 million from one MDB into his personal bank account. Stay up to date with VOA. This is VOA Asia. Thank you for tuning in to us at VOA Asia from the Voice of America. Venezuela's President Nicolas Maduro Tuesday announced he reached a number of bilateral agreements with China, including a $5 billion loan and a greater stake in a joint oil venture as Caracas struggles amid an economic collapse caused by years of recession, hyperinflation, and widespread shortages. Venezuela will also increase its oil exports to China by about 1 million barrels a day. Mr. Maduro visited China last week and met with his counterpart, Xi Jinping, as well as officials from the China Development Bank and China National Petroleum Corporation. Venezuela, trying to circumvent Western sanctions, will also join China's New Silk Road Development Program. Jennifer McCoy is a political science professor at Georgia State University and former America's director at the Carter Center. She told VOA's Victor Beatty China is now Venezuela's largest creditor.
Venezuela has borrowed about $65 billion from China. And for a while, China had cut off new lending and had simply extended grace periods for Venezuela to pay back old. But now it looks like they're investing again. And given that Venezuela's economy is in such a bad situation, this investment would appear to only make sense if China were getting a great deal of control, as indeed it looks like they're getting 49% of the company. So what Maduro is giving up is control over Venezuela's assets, essentially.
Venezuela's opposition says Mr. Maduro's desperate government is ceding oil assets on the cheap to stay afloat despite U.S. sanctions and falling oil production.
Yeah, that's exactly what it does look like. You know, Russia already has 49% of Citgo in the United States. And now, if China has 49% of this oil deal, as well as already Venezuela owed China oil as a product way into the future in order to pay back past loans. So it does look like the Maduro government is mortgaging Venezuela's future just to keep itself afloat and to keep itself in power. But on the other hand, it's unclear how this goal of increasing production by 1 million barrels a day will even be accomplished. They're only producing 1.2 million now. That's one-third of what they produced 20 years ago in the 1990s. And this is because they've lost the capacity for production. They simply don't have the person power, they don't have the equipment, they don't have the funds. So even with an infusion of cash, it's not clear how they can physically ramp it up this quickly as it proposed.
With China's new assertiveness being felt in various parts of the world, could possibly Venezuela be a beachhead for China strategically in Latin America?
Well, China's already got extensive presence and trade and investment relations with Latin America. It's already got extensive ties. But yes, that is a concern that some have raised, that this will be a beachhead, along with others who have been welcoming Chinese investment, particularly other Venezuelan allies in Latin America. There have also been suggestions that other Latin American countries who do have Chinese investments and trade, but who are concerned about Venezuela, so countries like Brazil, Chile, Colombia, start pressing China itself to reconsider and to try to encourage the Maduro government to make changes.
Jennifer McCoy said China now has a great deal of leverage over Venezuela's government. She also wonders if China's motivation is to buy up cheap assets in troubled and unstable countries like Venezuela. Coming up, a former Pakistani prime minister is a free man. You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news alert from VOA Asia. A high court in Pakistan has ordered the release of former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif, his daughter Maryam, and son-in-law Mohammad Safdar, suspending the sentences handed to them for corruption. In July, a special anti-corruption tribunal found the three guilty of owning foreign assets worth beyond their known sources of income. The so-called accountability court sentenced Nawaz Sharif, Haryam, and Sadafar to jail terms of 10 years, 7 years, and 1 year. This is VOA Asia. The UN Office for Disaster Risk Reduction warns hurricanes, floods, drought, and other extreme weather events are set to increase as climate change accelerates. It says urgent action must be taken to minimize these risks. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the agency's headquarters in Geneva.
Catastrophic weather events are threatening all regions of the world. Earlier this year, wildfires in North America and Europe, widespread flooding in India, flooding and landslides in Japan caused extensive damage and devastation. Storms, torrential rains, and flooding are endangering and disrupting the lives of millions of people across the Americas, Africa, and Asia. UN Office for Disaster Risk Reduction spokesman Dennis McLean notes a doubling in the number of recorded extreme weather events during the past 40 years.
Despite the extensive threat posed by events such as Typhoon Mangkhut in the Philippines and China, we are seeing relatively low mortality because of the success of weather forecasting, early warning systems, and better public understanding of disaster risk. However, the economic losses are likely to be considerable, and the impact on the poor will be hardest. This underlines the importance of strategies to reduce disaster risk, which include better adaptation to climate change.
The UN agency warns of the growing risk posed by landslides worldwide. It attributes this mainly to a combination of human activities, such as development in hazardous areas and heavy rainfall. It notes the single biggest loss of life in a disaster last year occurred in Sierra Leone's capital, Freetown. More than 1,000 people were killed in a landslide following heavy rainfall. The agency says the victims had been living in badly constructed homes in an area vulnerable to natural disasters. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This news alert from VOA Asia. China has held talks with the United States in an attempt to urge Washington not to require some Chinese state media outlets to register as foreign agents, that according to China's foreign ministry. Spokesman Zheng Shuang said Beijing's communicated with the U.S. about the issue and added that it was opposed to politicizing the media. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. In the days following the destruction of Hurricane Florence, many coastal North Carolinians in the United States remained away from their homes. Authorities ordered mandatory evacuations across the southern state, making calls for help difficult to answer. With household pets trapped in crumbling shelters, volunteers and donations have begun pouring in for support. Arash Arabasadi reports from the capital of North Carolina, Raleigh.
Dry goods and other pet supplies are just some of the donations pouring in from people who want to help dogs and cats in rural parts of North Carolina since Hurricane Florence covered much of the state with record-setting rainfall. Volunteers say each one of these stacks of dry food weighs more than 450 kilograms. donations, mostly sourced through Facebook, helped deliver the veterinary care for the dogs sheltering at the North Carolina State Fairgrounds.
A lot of people, and we saw this in Katrina, they're not leaving their houses unless they can take their dogs with them. For many people, the dogs are all they have.
People donated mostly cleaning supplies and water, while famous chef Jose Andres and his nonprofit World Central Kitchen helped feed volunteers.
Everybody's just rolling up their sleeves. It's teamwork. You know, I've got people that have probably never cleaned a cage before. I've got people who have never walked a dog before, but it's just who needs to do what and where the need is.
Volunteers say much of these goods are going to some of the most rural parts of the state, where people may not have electricity or clean water. Area residents went shopping just to donate it all.
Everything on the list, actually. So dog food, bleach, blankets, towels, paper towels, Clorox wipes, and bowls.
The more than 100 animals at this makeshift shelter will be matched with foster care homes if they're not claimed by owners in the next 2 weeks. Unlikely, volunteers say, as they were already abandoned, meaning these animals are now more likely than ever to find permanent homes. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Raleigh, North Carolina.
In Baltimore, a free after-school music program called Orc Kids is being used as an instrument of change for children in underprivileged neighborhoods. VOA's Deborah Block has the story.
Here at the Seed School in Baltimore, 15-year-old Nima Robinson concentrates on a piece of classical music. For the past 4 years, Nima has been taking free after-school group violin lessons through Orchids.
It makes me feel happy because I know like I can do different styles.
Her teacher, Arum Kim, grew up in Korea and studied violin at the prestigious Peabody Institute in Baltimore. Kim says Nima's determination has helped make her a top student.
It's given someone like Nima the confidence and practice to be in front of people, to have a skill set that you can be proud of.
Nima's musical journey started when she and her mother, Susan Johnson, watched a concert in Baltimore that showcased Orchids, not knowing that one day, Nima would be on stage herself with the mostly African-American group.
And I'm elbowing Nima and I'm going, that's what you should be doing.
Nima had a hard start in life with both parents in prison. As a result, Johnson became both guardian and mother to her.
She's helped me a lot. She's my number one supporter. She fusses at me to practice. She pushes me. And like, if it wasn't for my mom, I don't think I would like really be this good in playing.
Orchids has been instrumental in guiding many students, some from troublesome backgrounds, by providing a place where the children feel respected and safe.
Some of the students come in to the class, into the group setting, with the baggage from all day long. That could be poverty, that could be trouble at home. It's helpful when I learn about their families.
Aside from the camaraderie and encouragement that Orchids provides, Nima also enjoys performing.
I like seeing like the crowd, like the audience like come out and just like the end just clap and just stand up. That just makes my day.
Thanks to her free violin lessons, Nima was accepted into the Baltimore School for the Arts, where she now studies music. She hopes to earn a college degree in music so she can teach other Black children like herself how to live their lives on a high note.
It doesn't matter what race you are. You can play music. If it's your passion, it's your passion.
Deborah Block, VOA News, Baltimore.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast. Take VOA Asia with you. Find us at voanews.com and let's hear from you at VOA Asia Facebook and our email at voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Greg Burns. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day.